Welcome to another transformative episode of Meltdown to Mastery. I'm your host, Jane Marchiandi, and today's conversation is nothing short of extraordinary. We have a special guest who has traversed the realms between life and death, and she's here to share her profound insights that have the power to reshape the way we perceive ourselves and the world around us. I am honored to welcome Nicole Kerr, the author of the nationally best-selling book, You Are Deathless. Nicole's journey takes us beyond the ordinary as she reveals the wisdom she gained from a near-death experience. She wants us to recognize the inherent truth that we are all deathless beings, transcending the boundaries of our physical existence. In this episode, Nicole generously imparts her 10 most valuable insights gained from the edge of mortality. She guides us through the revelation that the most crucial purpose we have in this life is to love ourselves. It's a message that resonates at the core of our being. As we delve into Nicole's teachings, we'll explore how understanding these principles enables us to connect with our own souls, recognizing our unity with others and with the divine. Nicole believes that armed with these profound truths, we can transform not only our individual lives, but also contribute to the collective shift that can manifest a world filled with magic and wonder. Stay tuned as Nicole Kerr takes us on a journey from the brink of mortality to the mastery of life itself. Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, empowering women to overcome midlife crisis by rewiring the subconscious mind. Feeling overwhelmed, disillusioned, stuck? We all have. Here we explore inspiration and empowerment to navigate through the tough times and move to a place where hearts soar, minds manifest, and bodies heal. Welcome, Nicole.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be on your podcast today and looking forward to our discussion on a topic that's really important but difficult for a lot of people to talk about, which is death.
Right. But an important one, as you said. So let's jump right into your experience. You had a near-death experience at 19, and then I want you to go into why you claim how none of us are deathless.
Okay. When I was 19 years old, I was a second-year sophomore cadet at the United States Air Force Academy. And one thing you need to know about me, Jane, is I didn't grow up wanting to be in the military. My dad was in the military. He wanted one of his children, which there are four siblings here, to follow in his footsteps and to go into the academy and become an officer. And when I was a junior in high school, I decided I was going to do that because I have a condition called people pleasing. Okay. And it's an identity a lot of us have. And it may have served us when we were younger, but it certainly doesn't serve us when we get older. And I was trying to please my dad and be his girl and get his love and attention. And I thought the best way to do that would be to be the one sibling that went to the academy. And when I got accepted, I was like, oh my gosh, now I got to really go. And I knew from day one, first day of boot camp, that was not the right place for me to be, or my soul. But Jane, I don't know about you, but in our family, quitting and failure is not an option. So when you start something, you have to finish it, no matter how much you dislike it. And my parents never gave me permission to quit. And so the humiliation, the embarrassment, the shame of quitting, I just couldn't face that. So I made it through my first year, which was a lot of abuse, a hazing. It was not easy. And then I started my second year. And at the beginning of the year, we had a squadron kickoff event offsite. And I was one of the last to leave. And I got a ride with a senior back to the academy. And I didn't realize he had a different agenda. He wanted to go have some beers and smoke some cigarettes and make out. And I came from a very conservative background. I grew up in Mississippi, and I had never even been on a date when I went out to the academy. So needless to say, I thought, well, I'm going to have some fun for once in my life. Because my dad's rules were no smoking, no drinking, and no dating upperclassmen. along with some other commandments I talk about in my book. But I decided to just say, okay, I'm going to just go with this. And then when it got to the part where he wanted to make out, I said, no, we're not going to do this. We need to get back. And we got back on the road. And that was the last thing I remember until I woke up in the ICU the next day. And of course, the first thing I said was what happened. And my air officer commanding and my squadron commander were there and told me I had been in a car crash and the driver was okay. He had minimal injuries. He was in a different hospital and they'd already called my parents and that they were making plans to come out that week. And what I didn't know was what had happened in between. My memory went blank and it stayed blank for 19 years. And I now know what happened because the EMT, who was the first responder on the site, basically he came to my hospital room 10 weeks after the crash, introduced himself and told me what happened. And then when my memory came back, it was quite clear what happened. But I was pronounced dead at the scene. They could not get any vitals on me. A group of bystanders had heard it and called 911, came over and checked both me and the other the cadet, and they couldn't get any vitals on me. So they went in and got a blanket and covered me up. And it took about 10 minutes for the first responders to get there. And I was clinically dead at that point. And when John, the EMT, it's his name, got there, he took the blanket off and couldn't get any vitals as well. So he did a sternal knuckle press, which is designed to elicit pain in the body. And the only thing that moved in my body that indicated I was alive was my right pupil. My eye flinched and my pupil dilated. Now, Jane, have you ever heard of that saying, our eyes are the window to our soul?
Well, yes.
So when the car crashed, I later remembered going butt up through the windshield and I got up into the air, and that is when I froze and an angel from the other side came. And in my book, I call him Casper, the friendly ghost, but I now know it was my grandfather, my dad's side, that was the angel that came and took me up over to the other side. And when we die, we all have an energy body. And upon death, that energy body cracks open from the top down and our soul flies out. So that happened to me when I was stuck midair. So I knew when I looked down to the ground that I was going to die. And I remember crying out, God, please help me. And I knew that I wasn't going to make it. And so I never felt the pain of impact because my soul left before that happened. And that actually is a common occurrence in a lot of traumatic incidents where there is a near-death experience. Most people leave their body before they actually, hit the ground or become dead or whatever the circumstances are. So,
Nicole, why do you think that happens? Is it to save us from the traumatic experience of
impact? Yeah, because it's traumatic enough to go to the other side and come back and try to remember that and to understand that when you come back from a near-death experience, I want to just go over the term and what it really means. Dr. Bruce Grayson is the leading NDE researcher now, and he says that that term refers to a mystical, profound experiences that people report when they're close to death or experience death. And they're interestingly most common in patients who survive severe head injuries or trauma or cardiac arrest. In other words, conditions in which you would die and stay dead unless somebody initiated emergency medical procedures to help you. So that is the definition, the working definition on an NDE. And of course, no two NDEs take the exact same shape. But one of the consistent features is this white or clear bright light that most people describe of an indescribable brilliance. And it doesn't hurt our eyes in any way or dazzle them or keep us from seeing anything around us. And that is what happened to me. That was the only memory I have had was these rays of brilliant white light flooding me from all sides. They were like streams of light that just cocooned me, wrapping every part of my being in a chrysalis of soothing waves. And so instead of the pain of impact, I felt rocked and held. And for me, this was bliss. And that was all I remembered about the accident for 19 years. And then as I was on my way to CDC one day, the Centers for Disease Control, where I was working, my memory came back after I'd gone to Starbucks, and it's called repressed memories. So yeah, I think that is why that happens, is because when you look at the injuries most people sustain from massive trauma, if we remembered that, we wouldn't want to live the next day. You just, you know, until you're able to get to a point where you have some safety in your sense of being and you have support to deal with trauma. But when you're coming out of a crash or a major trauma, you're just trying to survive. And that's all my body was doing at that point, was physically trying to survive. And I will tell you, they had to do CPR on me when my soul came back in through my eye. That is when my blood pressure, they were able to get a reading of 60 over zero. Now, normal blood pressure is 120 over 80. So you can see that I was going in and out of death at that point, barely holding on. So they did CPR the entire 20 minutes to the nearest community hospital, not a trauma hospital, just a community hospital. And the goal was just to try to get me stabilized that night. And it took the surgical team the entire night to just stabilize me. So it was a long road recovery-wise, 4 months in the hospital, massive fractures and infections and, name it, operations. And 2 weeks into my hospital stay, I had another near-death experience where I actually coded on the way to an emergency operation. They got me out of the room, and in the hallway, my heart started stopping. And so they were trying to resuscitate me on the way to the operating room. And then once they got me in the operating room and started the procedure, I did flatline, and they went ahead and called time of death and told my parents that I had passed away. And it's interesting because I remembered a year and a half ago, the exact memory of me flying out of my body and going and looking for the light again. I wanted to be out of pain so bad, and the suffering that I was in, even for that 2 weeks. And so some part of me remembered that other side. But then once they got my heart, it just started up again within 2 minutes. I mean, this is the kind of spiritual experience that you can't explain. The doctors can't explain. It just started right back up. And what I now know is my angel James, he came back and he said, "No, Nicole, you got to get back in your body. You have a mission." And I'm just like, oh, you know, I didn't want to come back when I was on the other side. I clearly remembered that. And they told me I had an important mission, and that was to tell people not to be afraid of death. And also, you know, when you're in soul form, you don't have the constraints that you have in your physical body. So I heard other angels on the other side. And now we're not speaking English, okay? You're hearing things through and interpreting them through vibration, telepathy, other means of communication. And what I heard them talk about was how we as humans need to ask them for help. And that really resonated with me, how we don't ask our angels for help. And we need to start doing that. We have a whole spiritual realm that is ready, willing, and able to assist us with whatever we need in our life. But we have to remember to ask them to please help us. And they will. And they will give you the evidence that they are helping you. But you have to start that dialogue and that relationship, because we operate on free will. And most of us choose, or we forget to ask for help. And that is one thing to start getting in the habit of, is asking your angels for help. Even if it is something as small as a parking place, they will come through for you. Believe you me. And they want to help. They really do. They have our highest and greatest good at their foremost thought.
Yes. You know, that is one of the reoccurring nuggets of truth that keeps coming through is that even when we're in our biggest crisis or meltdown, where we wonder what life's all about, if we can just remember or just ask for help from our own higher self, angels, God, you know, it's there, but we don't often ask.
Yeah. So those were two of the big messages that I got. And then what I talk about also are the 10 common lessons from near-death experiences that come from a scientific background, which were featured in the 2020 annual report from the International Association for Near-Death Studies. And I put this in my book and some other science because I was trained as a scientist. I worked for the Centers for Disease Control. And even though I was raised Southern Baptist and Lutheran and believed in that concept of, you know, the duality of God, when my memory came back, I realized that that was a false belief system. God is love, period, end of sentence. There's no judgment. There's no criticism. There's no wrath of God coming on us for screwing up. That's all man-made concepts designed to keep us in fear. And when we're in fear, we're not in clarity. And when we're not in clarity, we're not making decisions that are serving us for our highest and greatest good. And not only that, Jane, I would say when you're in fear, you're also worrying. Most of the time, those two go together. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. And when you're in fear, you're definitely not connected to your heart, to love, to source energy. So
spirit can't get through when you're filled with that much fear.
Yeah.
And in fear, here's a good sign to know you're in fear. You want to fix and control other people and situations. So when you find yourself wanting to fix your mate or fix your kid, or fix a situation, know that there's a part of you that's in fear and you need to pull that back and look at yourself and go, what am I scared about, instead of projecting it onto them?
That is a brilliant way of looking at it. Yes.
Yeah. It's not easy to do, but I just quickly want to go over the 10. The first one is we don't die. Now that's the title of my book. You are deathless. Yes, our physical vessel here is going to decay and die, but our soul, and I talked about it earlier, our soul lives on. Our soul has had many lives, and that may be a newsflash to some people, but this isn't our only rodeo in terms of our incarnation of our soul and learning lessons that we need to do to keep evolving. Second is love is all that matters and the source of all that exists. Think about that, the source of all that exists. So whatever you want to call source, God, source, higher power, creator, author of our lives, it is love. And love is not only an emotion and a behavior, it's an energy. And we are all at our core energy. That's why we have an energy body. Number three, everything and everyone is connected because we're energy. And that is a lesson we are not getting right now in America. We really need to understand how we're all connected. Do you want to say anything on that one?
It's the reason that we try to control things, because we don't trust that connection and that everything will evolve and become what it is supposed to become if we just allow love energy, right?
Yeah.
So there's a relinquishing or letting go in a way in order to do what you're saying.
Yeah, because then we have to give up judgment, because if we're not connecting to everyone and everything, and I'm talking about all sentient beings, I'm talking about Mother Earth. I'm not just talking about, you know, people that are of a different race or different sexual persuasion or whatever. But we have to understand, over on the other side, we are not judged. Okay. A lot of religions, especially Catholic, Protestant ones, present God as dual, that he's loving and kind, but also that he'll judge you and what I'm here to say is God is not a vending machine. Okay. That concept is just not true. It's not about doing the right behaviors, putting them in and hoping and praying that the right behavior is going to come out. There's nobody on the other side taking down what you're thinking or what you're doing and saying, oh, bad girl, bad boy. It's not Santa Claus. So we are not judged on the other side. In fact, when I was on the other side, when I left my body, God had been all around me. That white light was God. God was in me. God was me, and I was God. God was presence and fullness and oneness, but most of all, God was love, pure, no strings attached, open arms, love. Now, in that state, I had not suddenly received forgiveness from a stern father for my mistakes because I didn't follow his rules. My mistakes just didn't exist. So really get that. They never had. That's all an illusion. Nothing I had done on earth needed to be weighed or measured. And the life I had left behind just told a story, but just one of many, I guess, that I've lived in different realms. And I really did, I honestly felt like an astronaut floating in outer space, filled with wonder and awe. And, you know, back to that word fear, in the 1600s, the word fear meant awe and reverence. Okay. Then it somehow over the decades or over the millenniums got switched to a really negative word. But every NDE that I have talked to, except for a few distressing ones, was filled with wonder and awe, this sense of reverence for this energy, this light, it's hard to put it into words what it all is. But it's just, you just feel, you're filled with it. Mm. And that really is so comforting at the end of the day. So one of the things I tell people is please quit judging yourself here on earth. These lessons, please start putting them into practice now so that you don't have to die and go to the other side and learn them. And if we would all just quit judging one another, think what a wonderful world we would live in.
Right. Well, it's like we're programmed from early years, like you said, to please others. And we have all these programs that we're not good enough. And so we do walk through life judging ourselves. So after being on the other side, what do you think the purpose of life is? Is it just to remember these things that you're speaking of?
No, it's loving ourselves and others.
Yes, ultimately.
It's the most important thing we can do. And when you truly love yourself unconditionally, you're not judging yourself. And you realize that you're only here in this body temporarily. And what you remember, because we all develop spiritual amnesia, like you were saying, when we're very young at birth, we forget who we are at a soul level, which is perfection, which is our radiance, glory. You know, we're in our power. There's nothing that would cause us to not feel worthy at all. There's no filters that are put on us. So we are each given, I think, different purposes because we're all on different soul paths. Some of us are more advanced than others. And so mine got rewritten when I died at 19. And when I went to the other side, my contract now was to tell people not to be afraid of death. And, you know, while quite, it seems like a quite simple thing to say, but it's really taken me almost four decades to understand that and what that looks like for me. And I've been in the wellness field my entire life because of my health conditions from the crash. And I have shifted my focus toward the spirituality and becoming here's a new word for you, eternality advocate. Mm-hmm. And that word, it is an actual word. William Faulkner used it in one of his books, but it means a quality or state of being eternal, having no end and endlessness or everlasting. And I do remember growing up in church that we would, that the church service in the Lutheran church would always end, you know, with this love everlasting, you know, and it was just like, wow, that really is the one thing I can take away is that is what is the consensus on the other side. It's all about love and oneness. And so, you know, the other piece I want to just say in lessons, we're never alone. We may feel like we're alone, but we have that whole spiritual realm of guides and angels that are always willing to be there for us. They're there for us, whether or not we acknowledge them or not. And I want people to really understand that you will see your loved ones and others when you return home, including your deceased pets. And I know for some people, they have more love and understand love more from their relationship with their pet than they do with other human beings. And we will have a life review on the other side. So it's important to understand and learn this lesson that everything that we say, do, and think right now during our physical life on this earth, how it impacts ourselves, others, and the world. Okay. So you will get a review on that. It's not a judgment, but it is a review where you're flipped and you're on the other side receiving what you did to other people. So this is a wake-up call to start practicing the kindness, the compassion, the empathy, the love, quit judging, you know, all of these kind of things that lower your vibration as a person and as a humanity.
Yeah. So we're not judged, but there is
a life review.
A review where we can see how we impacted the vibration of ourselves, others, and the planet, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's that learning curve, why we came in.
Yeah. So I'm always like, what is true mastery? I think it's, or I'm going to ask you, is the ability to realize how we're impacting ourselves, others, and the planet. and therefore change things for the better or manifest a better reality here.
Yeah, people have to understand they have to take responsibility for their actions and their spiritual life. And transforming yourself from your past and from your generational and ancestral and maybe even past life imprints takes work. Okay. Transformation is not for the faint of heart, but this is necessary. And once you become aware, that's the first key, is to become aware of what you're doing and how it's affecting others. Then you have the choice. That's the free will to do something about it or not. And having had several near-death experiences, I would say this awareness for all humans that we are love and oneness, hence everyone and everything is connected. And we need to awaken ourselves to this truth and start treating Mother Earth, one another, and all sentient beings with respect and equality.
Yes. I mean, even the state that we're in is a reflection of how we treat ourselves and others. It's like a hologram.
Exactly. Yeah. And I want people to understand, you know, I know a lot of writers, it took me 13 years to write my book. I wrote it from my heart and it's a completely different way of writing than scientifically. And a lot of writers write with death as this doom and gloom, and it's kind of cloaked in that image, and it has a cloud of depression and negativity around it throughout our culture and society. And I want people to start talking about it and understanding that my experience, along with hundreds of thousands of others, is 100% different. Death is absolute beauty. It's light. It's loving kindness. And there's a peace that passes all understanding on that other side. And it's important to start preparing for your death today. And if you can get over your fear, and you may say, I'm not afraid of death, but there's probably something unconsciously that you are afraid of with death. And I actually have a fear checklist in my book. And it's some things as simple as you fear ceasing to exist, or you fear the physical pain of dying. I mean, there's a lot of things around that, but I really hope my book becomes a book club book, because I want us to start talking about death and talking about it in a way that we can share experiences, because it is the only shared experience that every person on this globe is going to have. It used to be death and taxes, but now some people are getting out of paying taxes, Jane. So now I'm just saying it's death. But we're all going to face it. And just like we prepare for any other transition in our life, whether it's getting married or having children or just, you know, even the death of loved ones, you know, you have to prepare. And we don't do that. We're in a death denial atmosphere here. And we just, you know, I didn't think I was going to die at 19. We just never know when our last day on earth is going to be. And if we actually lived with that awareness, we would be more present, we'd be more kind, we'd be more loving, and we would live in a more deeper and meaningful way. And we would really understand that this may be the last time I see this person again. And how do I want to lead that conversation? And it would change the vibration of this planet if we were more present with that every single day. Because I guarantee you, the kids from Sandy Hook that were massacred, the people in Maine that were really massacred, none of them thought they weren't going to go home that afternoon. Mm-hmm. None of them, you know, and it does change your life. And I came back transformed, and it's been very difficult for me to integrate back into this earth where I see so much meanness, evil, hatred, division. Why can't we get along? We have so much, you know, I was in the military. We have freedoms that so many other countries don't have. We have wealth that so many other countries don't have. And yet simple things like, you know, even I have issues with the church theologically, but there's things in the Bible that are like, love your neighbors yourself. Most of us don't even know our neighbors, more or less love them. You know, there's simple things like that that actually dovetail right into these lessons that you can align it with, you know. Even Jesus said, judge not lest you be judged, you know. Yeah. But there's so much judgment going on right now politically, just in so many different arenas, that it's creating more fear in people. And like I said, when you're in fear, you're not going to make clear, you're not going to have clarity. And you're making decisions from that place in your brain, the amygdala, where you're in fight, flight, or fear. And that is the absolute worst place to make a decision from, because it's never going to be in your highest or greatest good to make a decision there. It needs to come from your parasympathetic state, which is your prefrontal cortex, which is in your forehead. And that's why they say sleep on it for a couple of days, okay? Just don't react, because it gives your body time to downregulate from being in that fight, flight, or fear place, that sympathetic state, you know?
Yes. And you can't make a good decision from there.
No.
Deep breathing immediately puts you back into parasympathetic, where you're connected to your heart. And now you can, you know, make a decision that's good for you, for others.
Yeah.
Yes.
Breathing is so important. And our breath is our life energy. You know, if you look at a corpse at a funeral, and if you think of the word funeral, it was fun is at the beginning of that word. Well, I have never been to a funeral that was fun. Now they have celebrations of life, but funerals, I mean, I think back in the day, it was about like the fun part just got taken out of it. But mm-hmm. You know, I do want to talk real quickly about something that many people may not know about, and it's called soul loss. And when my crash happened, among other things, parts of my soul left me. And that's known as soul loss or soul fragmentation. And I wish I had known this a long time ago, but I actually didn't get help with this particular piece until 2019 when I saw a shaman. And how did I know that I had soul loss? Well, there's three major symptoms. I didn't want to be here. Well, I knew this when my memory came back when I was 38, and I realized I didn't want to come back into my body because I knew it would be filled with a lot of pain and suffering, not only on the physical level, but on the mental and the emotional and the spiritual. The second one is a low level, consistent feeling that something is missing. Now, it's interesting to note that many compulsive behaviors or addictions fall into this statement. And for me, I can say now I can clearly see the link between me developing compulsive overeating the year after my crash and my feeling of emptiness and loneliness, because I disconnected from the concept of God I had had from my earlier years. I didn't believe in that God anymore. I was praying to it, and I wasn't getting any answers. And I was just like, I don't believe in you anymore. And so I went for 20 years until my memory came back, just going to different churches, feeling empty, feeling lost, feeling disconnected. And I developed binge eating. It's now known as binge eating disorder. And I hated myself because my parents blamed me for the wreck, even though I wasn't driving, and the state of Colorado charged the guy with, you know, vehicular assault and driving. It didn't matter to my parents. You know, they're very fundamentalist, I would say. And my dad is a very dogmatically positioned type of person, his way or the highway. And it's very unfortunate, but I had that eating disorder for 20 years, which is why I went and got a degree in nutrition, Jane, because I thought I could fix myself. Well, I think a lot of people do that. They go into fields thinking that they're going to help themselves and figure out what's going on with them as well as helping others. And I can tell you that eating disorders, it's not about the food. The food is what you're using to control. And you're realizing you're out of control in so many things in your life. And anyway, that's a whole nother probably podcast is eating disorders. But the third one was, I cannot get over it. So if there's something you can't get over, it just loops in your head. And for me, I felt stuck with my chronic health conditions. And I had this hypervigilance about keeping myself safe all the time. And so I also had PTSD. I didn't know it. And I wasn't being treated for it. I was being treated for clinical anxiety. And so I was misdiagnosed for 30 something years, and I was having night sweats, which was the trauma trying to come off of me. You know, there's so much to this that I was trying to figure this out on my own and just make my way through Western medicine, through Eastern medicine. And I finally, when I had the soul retrieval and my parts came back together, I can tell you that that was some powerful healing that happened with me. And what you're dealing with here is in that spiritual hidden realm. And I'm here to tell you, it's a very real thing. Just like you have a flesh wound, you know, I had broken bones. Well, they have to take time to heal. I had mental wounds. I had PTSD. I had anxiety. I had depression. I still do. So I have to manage that. You know, those are wounds that I still have to manage. And you have spiritual wounds, and nobody ever talks about that. But we know that 22 veterans a day commit suicide, and it's probably more than that. Just dealing with the VA system alone is enough to stress people out. Anyway, that's a whole nother story as well. But I have my sympathy to all veterans that have to go through the VA system. It is very frustrating, and it is very stressful. And so what I want to say about that is, that doesn't need to be. We are a developed country, and we should be doing more to help these men and women who give up their life to fight for our freedom, to help them with the mental piece, with the soul piece, which I think is the biggest piece, because our souls are not designed to go kill another person. They're just not. And when that happens, your soul is going to fragment when you see the horror of being in the theater or at war.
Yeah. And we come as humans, we learn and record in many different ways, but there is, like, our subconscious is there to record everything so we can recognize everything, but it stays, it's like the elephant we're riding. The conscious mind is like this small human riding an elephant, and we're not even aware of how much it affects us. But then there's this other part of us, this energetic recording and the soul that could get fragmented. And so much, we're so intricate. We're, you know, and we're not taught how to come back into wholeness.
No, and I think that's why my entire adult life, Jane, 40 years, has been spent on this journey of transformation, and I'm still on it. I will be honest with you and that my listeners, I actually had a panic attack this morning, and I was like, oh my God, what is going on? And so when I got to the core of it, I really understood. My plastic surgeon just passed away. I just found out he passed away yesterday, and he saved my foot. Okay. My foot was only being held on by 1 millimeter of skin. Mm-hmm. Otherwise it was chopped off. So he took a skin graft and grafted my foot together. It had less than a 5% chance of taking because it was directly adhered to the tendon. And by the grace of God and his skill set and my body's ability to heal, it took. But I just realized when I saw his obituary, how close I was to having a prosthetic foot, you know, and when you're in trauma and you have so many different wounds, I had a colostomy, I had all these things going on. I was just like, oh my gosh, I really understood how this whole experience of going to the other side and coming back and remembering it made me different from everybody else. And I am more sensitive. I can't handle, you know, like toxins, smoke, alcohol, excessive noise. There's so many things. And my whole view and concept of God, of course, had to be deconstruction and rebuilt, because that was not what I experienced on the other side. Was a judgmental God. And when people say, is there hell? Is there a hell? I said, hell no, there's no hell. It's on earth. And in the disparities that people are living and in the depression and the poverty and the rumble of war, of the decay, all of this. I said, that's not even knowing where your next meal's coming from. What do you mean, whether or not, Jesus Christ or whatever somebody's trying to get you to believe? That's far from their mind, you know? So it's just really been a long journey for me, Jane, to be honest with you, to understand why I came back, to get this message solidified, to write this book, to start talking about it to people, because it's been a difficult life. And it really, I'd like to say it was all butterflies and unicorns and roses. And there's been moments of that. But as I work through each layer and unravel things, it gets lighter and more joyful. And I'm starting to understand how to fully live life now, because I was wrapped up in so much fear since we won. I mean, the church instilled so much fear in me of being a bad girl, that I'd go to hell and I'd be eternally separated from my family and God, that I didn't want to step out of bounds at all and mm-hmm. risk losing that. And when you grow up with that fight, flight, or fear running your system, it takes a toll on you. It really does. And it will start showing up in different physical illnesses later in your life that the doctors can't find a reason for. And it's usually you've suppressed emotions, or you're not dealing with your soul and it is wanting to wake you up. And a great exercise to help you connect to your soul is if you journal, right? I get this from Lee Harris, right at the top. What does my soul want to tell me today?
Love that.
And then just let your pen flow. And if nothing comes out, do it again tomorrow. Same thing. What does my soul want to tell me today? And just keep at it. And eventually you'll develop the relationship with your soul as well. But so many of us are still disconnected from our soul and the spiritual realm in terms of living life. And when you can connect to that piece, and that's what I mean about it's taken me this long to get in alignment with my body, my mind, my soul, and my spirit, and be grounded in source, knowing that everything is working for me.
Mm-hmm. And now, do you feel like you're moving toward being able to manifest life in a different way, not from fear, but from a trust and love perspective?
Yeah, I do. But I had so much fear to clear out. It was like a haunted mansion of fear, everything from from God to my father, to my mother, because she and my dad are on the same page with everything, then my siblings, you know, I realized that when I came back, they still believe in their version or concepts of God that they were taught early on, and they don't believe my story. And I thought, well, if my family doesn't believe me, well, then who else is going to believe me? And I was told very clearly, you did not come back for your family. You came back to help others, and you have your soul family, and that's where you will always belong. And I was like, wow, that just struck me, you know, like, whoa, okay, give up trying to convince my family what happened and trying to prove to them or keep needing validation that this NDE happened. I know it happened. It's documented from a doctor's perspective, from the EMT's perspective, it's well documented, you know, so it's been interesting to me. Those limiting belief systems kept getting in my way of being able to put myself out there and speak my truth, even though it disagrees with theirs. And it's very hard, you know, to speak your truth when your own family doesn't believe you. But I have to tell you, we have to get away from this family is everything concept, because here we came into this world for a purpose, and it's not to please our family. Okay. You learn from your family, but it's also about you having your own voice, not being a people pleaser, to be able to remember who you are and why you came in, and to start moving in that direction and becoming aware that you are this brilliant, radiant, glorious being and always have been. And there's been nothing wrong with you ever, ever. And we forget that because we get all these filters and these conditions put on us that tell us we're less than, not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I was thinking while you were speaking, and I haven't thought this through, but that maybe our family, the ones closest to us, are our biggest mirrors or our places of the most self-doubt that we need to work through. And then when we work through them, we find self-love. And then it doesn't matter what they think anymore.
That's exactly right. Because with my parents, I was finally able to go, I don't need your love. I don't need your acceptance anymore. I don't need your permission. I'm free from you. And that's where you become free, I guess, is really at the bottom line when you work through these transformations. You're free of judgment, of criticism, of needing anything from anybody, and realizing that you can give it to yourself. And God is within us. God is not external. Eternal. We are all an eternal spark of God, and we have the power to bring that radiance into full light and being.
Yes. That must be in your 10 things you wanted to tell us today. I feel like I sidetracked you at 4. Have we missed any?
Valuable.
I just want to make sure you cover it.
We are more than our physical body and brain. You know, a lot of people think, okay, they put so much time and energy into their physical looks and their brain. And it's like, okay, when you pass away, that's gone. Your brain is an organ. It's going to decay and your body's going to decay. So start spending more time about your relationship with your soul and that spiritual realm, and get to understand and know that part, and that it exists, and that you have confidence in that. And that is going to be your journey. Everybody's journey looks different with that, but start exploring it. We are never alone. I covered that. We're not judged. Our true selves are perfect, and we are loved more than we can even fathom. That's what I was talking about with our spiritual amnesia. We forget that our true innate soul self is perfect. And we're loved in a way that, you know, like I said, God is love. Once I entered that light, that was pure love. And I'm telling you, on the other side, there's more colors than in the Crayola color box or the nail polish colors that are out there. I mean, there are more there's such beauty that I can't even put it in words in the English language, Jane. It really is unbelievable. It's like with your eyes, you don't have any, you're in soul form. You can see 360 all at one time. You get everything all at once. The same thing with music. You can hear multiple songs going on at the same time, and it all condenses into one sound. And I do want to tell people, when your loved one is passing or when you're passing, your hearing is the last sense in your physical body to go. So one of the things to prepare is get a soundtrack of your favorite music or whoever is going to be transitioning their favorite music and play that for them. Okay. I don't care if it's hard rock or what it is, you know, it doesn't have to be ethereal music. My husband is going to want Bruce Springsteen and, you know, a bunch of different musicians like that. And so not the music you want them to hear, what they love to hear throughout their life, and play that for them. That's really important, that you don't put your agenda onto them. And the same about letting them go. Give them permission to go. They don't need to hang on for one more person to come. If the person's ready to go, give them that permission to go. Free them. And then we've talked about seeing other loved ones in the life for you. That's it. We're done with our list.
Yay. We did. Yeah. Such valuable information, though, and not something we're taught.
No,
we're taught some of it, but then it's changed or hidden, or the real info is taken out. I don't know. It's just edited.
Well, and then our society, we have such a buffet of trances that we can put ourselves into, not to have to deal with ourselves and think about death or think about having to change some part of you or to get into therapy, try some of these modalities like neuroemotional technique, like EMDR, tapping, other things that get at these limiting conscious belief system. And when I talk about being in a trance, I mean like you're compulsively overeating, you're drinking too much, you're binging on Netflix, you're compulsively shopping, these things that are putting you in a trance so that you don't have to, an escape, so you don't have to deal with these other things out here that need dealing with.
Mm-hmm. And preparing for death.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
And here's another thing I also want to tell parents out there, is be honest with your kids about death. If you are a single parent, or if, in my sister's case, she lost her husband when her children were 10 and 14. Mm-hmm. And of course, they're like, "Mommy, are you going to die?" And she's like, "Oh, no, I'm healthy. I'm not going to die." And I told her later, and she didn't appreciate it, but I did tell her later. I said, "You know, that's not necessarily true." I said, "You need to be honest and tell these kids at an age appropriate level that, yes, we're all going to die. We really don't know when that could happen. I'm in good health. I'm doing everything I can to take good care of myself. So I'm not going to, you know, have something happen to me, hopefully. But there's a chance that something could happen. And if that does happen, here's what you need to know, that Uncle James and Uncle Nicole are going to be taking care of you. And there's going to be plenty of money for you to go to keep going to school where you're at. You're not going to have to worry about that. I'm going to be on the other side watching you, and you can talk to me in spirit form and ask me questions, and I'll give you answers, but they're not going to be in the English language like you would typically hear, for the most part. Now, some people do get downloads like that and can interpret, but they may send you a sign with the electricity going on and off, or with through a song, or through a, you know, there's angels everywhere. They come in all kinds of ways, through other human beings, through like my angel James from the other side, like the real angels that we're talking about, that we commonly understand from being raised in a religious environment. But they need to understand that, and they need to know that it is a chance that could happen, very slim. But to just tell them it's not going to happen, and then if something did happen to you, that leaves them with a lot of questions that they may never, ever get resolved and hinder their development in a spiritual aspect, especially.
Yeah, so true. Love it. Now, how do people find your book and more about you?
Okay. Well, my title of my book is You Are Deathless, a near-death experience taught me how to fully live and not fear death. And I'm delighted to say that it is a national bestseller, which is, I'm so grateful for everybody that has bought it and has been giving me these beautiful reviews on Amazon and Goodreads. And it's available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble and at your independent bookstore. They're able to order it for you. It's on Kindle and it's also on Audible. I just released it in May. I actually read it myself, narrated it myself. And Jane, that wasn't easy. I will just tell you, to read your own story. I mean, I think that was another trigger of, oh my God, what I've been through in my life. It just hadn't hit me like it did when I read through the whole book. And then listen to myself, read it myself. So I had to get back into therapy. So it's what I'm telling you is, if anybody says that they have all the answers and they've got it done, that's not true. We are all on this journey. We are all evolving. We are, healing is not linear. And this is just where I'm at my point in my life today. And, you know, we continue to move forward in life, and it gets easier and better when I know that it's just not me, that I have spirit and angels and guides and source. They've got my back. They've had my back. And it's not all just depending on me anymore. That is the biggest relief and freedom.
So beautiful. We're all, as a naturopathic doctor, I realized we all go through major life lessons, major trauma, dark nights of the soul, the whole gamut as humans together. So,
And I don't want to take away, you know, like you said, we are humans, but we're spiritual beings in a human body. So I don't want to take away how do I want to say it? You know, in the human world, there's still suffering, grief, pain, loss that we have to carefully and compassionately hold and heal. But I want people to remember that the cosmic context is benevolent and extraordinary. And knowing that true context enables me and others to live a happier life and to prepare for our own graceful passing and to support others as they approach their own transition, because it is going to happen to us. And if we can hold that bigger picture in place, it makes the suffering on the human level a little less bearable, I guess.
Yes. And it's empowering. So empowering.
Yeah.
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 Thank you so much, Nicole. I'll put the link for the book and your website in the show notes. And I just want to tell you how much I enjoyed this, and I'm grateful that it's going out to others.
Thank you so much, Jane. It's, you know, it's time. I really believe the movie, what was it, After Death, just came out. I just went and saw that. So I think more and more people are starting to realize that there's more than what they have been told and conditioned to believe. And we are in an awakening, and there is going to be this collective consciousness just needs to, the light workers just need to start, you know, it's shining our light into the darkness of others and trying to get them to start waking up themselves is, I guess, what I'm trying to do. And my particular interest is wake up about death. Because you certainly don't, if you think about it, most families fracture and get angry at each other. And some of them never heal at the funerals and the readings of the will, because, or if the will wasn't in place, somebody got mom silver and I wanted it. And I mean, you know, it's just, they never talked to each other again after that. And it's because the person didn't prepare. They didn't have it in writing. They didn't tell people what they wanted. And it just has people infighting.
Yes. But what you're saying really does make us realize how powerful we really are and what matters.
Yeah. Well, I've enjoyed talking to you. Thank you for what you do in the world to help serve others as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
If you've enjoyed the information in this episode, share it with someone you care about and know will benefit. There is one thing for certain. Meltdowns are inevitable. Let's move into mastery together. In the show notes, you'll find my Linktree, which has links to many of the most popular platforms. You'll also find links to connect to the featured guest, webpage, and social media. Thanks again for being committed to mastery. Change in this world really starts within each of us.